pray for a day like today, bright and shining. Soca glory, everyone with a flag and a smile on their face. Lordy daddy, of every creed and race, Lord. Phenomenal, lovely atmosphere. If the Lord is our shepherd, who shall be fear?
No one.
The party starts.
Yes, the party starts down here at CKUW 95.9 FM on your dial in Winnipeg. This is Ras Fikoi with Prince Owona, Princess Tim Solom, Queen Victoria, Dr. T and John, who is here but never here. And sometimes in the editorial time, Princess Rachel, but always getting us up and down, in and out, Princess Catherine. Look out, look out. The body show on the air is about to take you up until 8 a.m. this morning. Go on.
Okay, I don't know what to do. I'm mad. Okay, I don't know what to do. Hey, brothers and sisters, I want you to know just who I am. Walk the young street line, all I see everywhere, fast clothes that I can't wear. I get mad, uptight, don't know what to do. Got three children and a wife to mine, and money I can't find. Still mad, uptight, and I don't know what to do. Say, man, what you gonna do? What I'm gonna do, what you gonna do? Okay, brother, what we gonna do? What we gonna do? This is what we got to do. Come together, organize, let our tosses synchronize. Get involved.
Listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, and the radio show name is called Fantastic Friday. Please come and join us every single Friday morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. every Friday morning.
Oh, yeah. new conceits. As the soon-to-be first provincial First Nations premier, he may face extraordinary expectations.
I didn't run on being the first First Nations premier. I put my name on the ballot to try and be the best premier.
At noon, the very first day outside the Manitoba legislature, one of those expectations on full display. Demonstrators insisting on fast action on a search of a landfill for the remains of two murdered First Nations women.
Today, we have the first Anishinaabe Premier of Manitoba.
Canoe supports the search. The outgoing government rejected it and even campaigned against it. With Canoe's election, Ottawa is offering to help fund research on how to do it. Through the campaign, Canoe did not present himself as a symbol of reconciliation, focusing instead on health care and affordability.
And if along the way they elected an Indigenous premier, then I would say that that's another testament to our country moving forward.
Canoe built his profile as a rapper, then TV host and journalist. Community activism led him to politics. In 2017, he became Manitoba NDP leader. His ascension to premier comes after past struggles, including addiction and criminal charges. He's built a self-narrative on second chances.
My life became immeasurably better when I stopped making excuses and I started looking for a reason.
Put it all together, he got elected.
I think it provides so much hope for the future for our province and for our young Indigenous people.
What it shows is that Manitoba has a lot to teach the rest of the country, I think, on the issue of reconciliation.
Now preparing to assume power.
There's a lot to live up to here in Manitoba, and I hope to be able to serve in a good way.
So, Cam, expectations are so high. What are Wab Canoe's biggest challenges?
Well, Ian, really, just pick any one. Healthcare, the economy, crime, justice, they're all front-of-mind issues here. Wab Canoe is walking through a big door, but he's not going alone. Several of his MLAs are Indigenous or First Nations. Many of them will be in cabinet. So it's really hard not to imagine that the attitude and the priorities of the Manitoba government when it comes to issues of equality and reconciliation won't be changing drastically. Ian?
Cam McIntosh, just outside the legislature.
Hey everyone, I'm Jess Turner. Make sure you listen to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9 FM every Friday morning, 6 a.m. till 8 a.m. That's way too early for me. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Mississippi Blues, coming to you, starting up this morning, jumpy and bumpy. Gotta be 100, eh? Blind boys of Alabama. Should we call them boys? They're grown up. The blind men of Alabama. Or the BBA. Everybody's looking to get a good measure. Some people want to wipe out other nations, other civilizations. They want to finish the job, they say. which means you want to take 100% out. What you say?
What you say?
Hey.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more.
Yeah, man.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack.
Amenability, agreeability, accountancy.
To treat me this away, cause I'll be back on my feet someday.
Don't care if you call this on
Richard.
You got no money, you just ain't no good.
Well, I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Gotta go, man.
Oh, now, baby. What you trying to do to me?
It's been hard to stay silent with all that's going on. In my mind, I get it. I hear what's being said from all corners of our earth. I get it when you're controlled by what you're thinking. In our heads, we hear, if you fight me, I'll fight you harder. If you curse me, I'll curse you and yours even stronger. That is how our mind thinks, speaking without listening to the spirit. It is a mind that is not connected to the soul. The spirit knows that fighting harder, cursing stronger, hating longer will never end. It just gets easier to use a knife, a gun, a drone, or a bomb. All in the name, for the name of blood spilled on the ground to leave more lives buried in the ground, never reaching higher ground. To any of the leaders that feel that this is the only way, I ask you to be brave enough to say in your way is a way to World War III. Am I the only one that sees this? I stand up with peace. I stand up with love. That's who I am. That is what God made me of. I stand down on war, and I stand down on hate. We cannot let revenge be our unimaginable fate.
Hi, I'm Julian Cooper. You're listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. This is my favorite morning wake-up show.
Find a cure. I may never risk another lover. Oh, believe me. I may never ever walk on water. I may never ever walk away. I may never get the chance to tell you. Oh, believe me. Oh, my heart, I want you to be strong. I need you to be all I believe in. Strong, I need you to be all I believe in. I may never wait to see tomorrow. I may never learn to seize today. I may never ever ask forgiveness. Oh, believe me. I may never ever rise above you. I may stumble as I lose my way.
I may never find the words to tell you.
All of us stand up with a straight face when we hear someone come and asking one of the military powers in the world to give them more arms and ammunition so they can finish the job. Finish the job here clearly means they want to wipe out all the rest of Palestinians. It clearly means that. And this is said in public and requested in public. And none of those so-called peacemakers has jumped up and said, no, that can't happen. We've had enough. While we've been asking for a ceasefire, people are asking for more fire to drop on Palestinian people. Not good. Not good.
You got to walk that lonesome valley. Well, you got to walk it for yourself. There's nobody here can walk it for you. You got to walk. My father had to walk that lonesome valley. He had to walk it for himself. Nobody here can walk it for him. He had to walk. Oh, Jesus had to walk that lonesome valley. He had to walk it for himself. It's nobody here.
Let me tell you a story about a boll weevil. Now, some of you may not know, but a boll weevil is an insect, and he's found mostly where cotton grows. Now, where they come from, nobody really knows. But this is the way the story goes. Farmer said to the boll weevil, I see you're on the square. Boll weevil said to the farmer, say, yep, my whole darn family's here. We gotta have a home. Gotta have a home. The farmer said to the boll weevil, say, why'd you pick my farm? The weevil just laughed at the farmer and said, we ain't gonna do you much harm. We're looking for home. And the boll weevil spotted him a lightning bug. He said, hey, I'd like to make a trade with you. Cause you see, if I was a lightning bug, I'd search the whole night through. Searching for home. I'd have me plenty of homes. And the boll weevil called the farmer and said, you better sell your old machines. Cause when I'm through with your cotton, you can't even buy gasoline. I'm gonna take me home.
Gotta have a home.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM. Ka-chow.
This is for my city dwellers, my storytellers, my soundscapers, music makers, and my dreamers of dreams. This is for the beat layers, the street sayers, the graph writers, and the painters. This is for the crate keepers, the image freezers, the lens seekers, and the photogs. This is for the spinners, the rewinders, drop the needle, pull it back, and come againers. This is for the movers, the body users, the kinetic acrobatic defying gravity provers. This is for the filmmakers, the actors, the activators, my sculptors, and my cans. Sprayers. This is for the dubbers, the dancers, the scribers, the scholars. This is for the freestylers, my improvisers, my poetical, lyrical, spiritual vocalizers. This is for my speechifiers, for the visionaries, for the bridge builders, the chain breakers, the power takers. This is for the door crashers, my drum beaters, the call to action taker to the streeters. For my behind the sceners, my planners, my finders, our on task and right on timers. For our organizers, our survivors, our motivators, and our strivers. This is for the uplifters and uprisers. This is for you, our ancestors. This is for you, our people blessers, our children, for our vision, for our villages, our hoods, our nations, our truths. This is for our culture, for our generation. This is for our creator and our creation. This is for our inner being and our outer, for our say it louder, big and prouder. This is for the art, for the word. This is for the sound. This is for the power.
They don't know nothing. All this stuff been warmed over and redone, and it's all right. I'm glad they're getting it. I've been in this business for a long, long time, and even I didn't know where the music was going for a while. And I was saying, when are they gonna find that magic? When is the music gonna get back to simple and basic? Cause I wanna go back. I wanna go back to a time when the music touched your heart and your soul and your mind and your body. I wanna go back to a time when there were blue lights in the basement. Y'all know what I'm talking about. I want to go back to a time when slow dancing was still in style. And when you got out on the dance floor, you touched your partner. You didn't have to look for him. I want to go back to that time when the music made you feel like you wanted to fall in love and you wanted to drive up to Lookout Mountain, but still had enough mystery in it not to tell what you did when you got there. I want to go back to a time when the music was wonderful. It was a part of my life. Sent me to the prom with my Krillin skirt on. Even if I did drive myself. I want to go back. I want to find those people that made that kind of music, you know. And I just want to tell them thank you. Thank you for giving us romance and mystery. I want to find Nat King Cole and Billy Eckstein and Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder and the Four Tops and the Temptations and the Pimps and Smokers. I want to find them, and I just want to walk up to them and say, you did it. You found that magic.
Don't know if you got a girl. Don't mean the disrespect, but thoughts of your rule my world. I even dream of you.
You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM. When you dive in Winnipeg, This is Fantastic Friday with Raspberry Choir, Prince Kabona, Princess Tim Sula, Queen Victoria, Dr. T and John, who's here but never here. But always here, dear, the Torella with Princess Rachel, and always here taking us up and around to devour all others. Princess Catherine, look out. Oh, Fantastic Friday.
Colleen, please listen to Fantastic Friday every Friday from 6 to 8 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Come join us.
The queen in a the park. Look how me cute and sexy like that. And me plant the con, so no better watch that. Show me step up in a life, them want to give me a fight. Show me look cute and them no look too right. They call on me to over me, man, a fight. And that now one, no time in a them life. Me no cut up, I can model every time.
Hi, everyone. My name is Belaine Osman. I'm a student here at the U of W. My students actually call me Madame Oz. Just letting you know, CKUW has an awesome show called Fantastic Friday, and you guys should listen to it. Stay tuned.
Well, here it is. Tell them, I tell
where you come from. As long as you're a black man,
a black woman, or a black child. Yeah.
No matter your nationality, you have got the identity.
and perspicacity. Hey, tell them that.
Cause if you come from Clarendon,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Portland,
it don't matter.
And if you come from West,
it really don't matter. Because coming to you all the way from West Africa, any country called Nigeria, if you want to call Prince Ugona to give you news and views from Africa, Prince Ugona.
Yes, good morning, Vasuka, and good morning to all of our listeners. Greetings from Africa. Today's first piece comes from the Nkwasi Now, where we speak with Palestinian human rights lawyer Diana Butu on the historic ruling and what impact it could have on Israel. Quote, the court makes it clear not only that Israel's occupation is illegal, but it also says that all countries around the world have an obligation to make sure that Israel doesn't get away with it, end quote. It's up to the international community now to put sanctions on Israel to end this military occupation. Listen closely.
All states and the UN are now under obligation not to recognize the legality of Israel's presence in the occupied Palestinian territory and to do nothing to assist Israel in maintaining this illegal situation. They are directed by the court to bring Israel's illegal occupation to an end. This means all states and the UN must immediately review their bilateral relations with Israel to ensure their policies do not aid in Israel's continued aggression against the Palestinian people, whether directly or indirectly.
All states must now fulfill their clear obligations. No aid, no collusion, no money, no weapons, no trade, nothing with Israel.
Even though it's non-binding, Amy, it doesn't mean that it doesn't have any weight. It simply means that Israel's going to ignore it. But what it does set is it sets out the legal precedent for other countries, and those other countries do have to respect the opinion of the highest court, the highest international court. And so what we see with this decision is that it's a very important and a very necessary one, because we see the court makes it clear not only that Israel's occupation is illegal, but it also says that all countries around the world have an obligation to make sure that Israel doesn't get away with it, that they have an obligation to make sure that this occupation comes to an end. And this is very important because over the years, and in particular over the past 30 years, we've seen a shift in international diplomacy to try to push Palestinians to somehow give up their rights. And here we have the highest international court saying that that isn't the case, and that in fact it's up to Israel to end its military occupation, and it's up to the international community to make sure that Israel does that. Well, there were some very interesting elements to this case. The first is that the court comes out very clearly and not just says that the occupation is illegal, but they also say that the settlements have to go and the settlers have to go. They also say that Palestinians have a right to return. Now, we're talking about over 300,000 Palestinians who were expelled in 1967, and another probably about 200,000 Palestinians who have never been able to return back. We're just talking about the West Bank and Gaza Strip because of Israel's discriminatory measures. The other thing that the court says is that it's not just the West Bank and East Jerusalem that are occupied, but also Gaza as well. And this is a very important ruling because for so many years, Israel has tried to blur the lines and make it seem as though they're not an occupation of Gaza, which they are. And so what this requires is that the international community not only not recognize the occupation, but that they take into account measures, or they take measures to make sure that Israel stops its occupation. That means everything from arms embargo to sanctions on Israel. Anything that is necessary that can be done to make sure that Israel's occupation finally comes to an end. And this is where we now see that instead of the world telling Palestinians that they just have to negotiate a resolution with their occupier, with their abuser, that the ball is now in their court. It's up to the international community now to put sanctions on Israel Israel to end this military occupation. Israel is carrying out genocide. They know that they're carrying out genocide. And we don't see that anybody is stopping Israel in carrying out this genocide. So here now we have yet another International Court of Justice ruling. This one, the previous ones are actually binding, saying that Israel has to take all measures to stop this genocide. And yet we just simply don't see that the world has put into place measures to sanction Israel, to isolate Israel, to punish Israel. Instead, it gets to do whatever it wants. But there is something very important as well, which is that Israel somehow believes that it's going to be immune, that somehow this polio or all of these diseases aren't going to boomerang back into Israeli society. They will. And the issue here now is whether we're going to see some very robust action on the part of the international community now that we have a number of decisions from the ICJ saying to Israel that it's got to stop and that this genocide must come to end. Israel must pay a price for continuing this genocide. You know, it's repugnant to me to be hearing that a war criminal, a person who has flattened Gaza, who said that he was going to flatten Gaza, who's issued orders to kill more than 40,000, upwards of 190,000 Palestinians. We still don't know the numbers. Who has made life in Gaza unlivable, who's using Palestinians as human pinballs, telling them to move from one area to the next, who's presiding over a genocide, and unabashedly so. It's going to be shocking to see the number of applause and rounds of applause and the standing ovations that this man is going to be receiving. It very much signals exactly where the United States is, which is complicit in this genocide. And Palestinians know this. If anything, he should have not had received an invitation. He should simply be getting a warrant for his arrest, not be receiving applause and accolades in Congress.
In this next piece, Dorit Nitzan, director of the Master's Program in Emergency Medicine at Ben-Gurion University and former regional emergency director to the World Health Organization's European office, says the prescription is ceasefire, vaccines, and good public health conditions. She mentions the discovery of the polio virus in Gaza.
In Gaza now, we are not there, and it's hard for us to imagine what both babies, newborn babies, their mothers, kids are going through. But what we know is that sewage samples that arrived to Israel, collected in Gaza for analysis, revealed the existence of a vaccine-derived polio there. And this is something that is expected in such conditions. So right now, we don't know, fortunately, we don't know of any polio patients in Gaza, but we anticipate that it will come. We know that behind each polio patient, there are about 100 and more people that are not symptomatic, meaning that it takes time for the symptoms to appear. The sewage system is a very good a sensitive marker for that. So knowing that it is there and it might appear, then the circumstances and the conditions of the healthcare, the health services is so bad that we are really, really worried for these kids. Yeah, the prescription is ceasefire, vaccines, and good public health conditions. This is, you know, it's a full prescription that comes in. What we know that for the past 20 years, with Israel's support, Gaza and the West Bank have succeeded very high rates of vaccinations, including for polio. So the older kids should be okay. Those who were born just before October 7th, and after are at risk. And for that, ceasefire is needed because we need to get the humanitarian workers, the health workers, the nurses need to get to each and every baby and each and every adult that has not been vaccinated in the past and vaccinate them. And that should be done under secure conditions. It cannot be done under war. We know that in every country, where there is a conflict, there is a risk for outbreaks, including polio, cholera, other foodborne diseases, respiratory diseases, as well as exposure to chemicals and others. But polio is one of them. So, and we saw it in Ukraine, in Ethiopia, and in many other countries, in Syria, etc. We know that the viruses and the bacteria and the toxic materials know no borders, and they actually go cross borders, as we saw in Iraq from Syria, etc. We therefore, it's not only the kids in Gaza, it's also the Israelis. And it is important to vaccinate the kids as soon as possible, those who are exposed to them, the humanitarian workforce, the health workforce in Gaza and here in Israel. My message is to go beyond politics. We do understand that there are deep, deep divides here. The 7th of October was terrible, and I do understand. Right now, we do not want to risk the kids on both sides and in every place, in any place. We want to take a break and stop it and make sure that every child has access to the vaccines.
In these next two pieces, the first one is a speech from Prime Minister Netanyahu, who was invited to Washington, D.C., and despite protests and despite any resistance. So that would be the first piece that you would hear. And then following that, we would speak with Palestinian human rights lawyer Nora Erekat about Benjamin Netanyahu's address to Congress, in which he defended Israel's brutal war on Gaza, lied repeatedly about the dire humanitarian conditions on the ground, and refused to talk about how to reach a ceasefire to end the bloodshed. You notice when you listen to this that many of the leaders were cheering for what is essentially a war on children. Listen it.
Today, as Israel fights on the front line of civilization, I too appeal to America. Give us the tools faster and we'll finish the job faster. I thank President Biden for his heartfelt support for Israel. After the savage attack on October 7th, he rightly called Hamas sheer evil. He dispatched two aircraft carriers to the Middle East to deter a wider war. And he came to Israel to stand with us during our darkest hour, a visit that will never be forgotten. Well, I have a message for these protesters. When the tyrants of Tehran, who hang gays from cranes, and murder women for not covering their hair, are praising, promoting, and funding you, you have officially become Iran's useful idiots.
I think that was probably the most disturbing, because for those of us who have followed this for 292 days now, we have understood the blatant lies that the Israel has said, that all of its apologists have made. But to watch U.S. Congress jubilantly cheer on, scramble over one another in order to cheer for essentially what is a war on children. When Netanyahu says they want to finish the job is annihilation. It is extermination. It is genocide. They have flattened all of Gaza. It is reported that it will take 10 to 15 years just to clean up the rubble. There are no hospitals. Children cannot be treated. There is now a spread of polio. And U.S. Congress is applauding for this jubilantly, at one point breaking out into a chant of USA, USA. And so as I watch that, one of the things that occurs to me is how the debate within the United States approaching the election in November has taken on the stance that there is a demarcation or a distinction between foreign policy and domestic policy, what happens over there and what happens at home, as if those things are not entwined and imbricated. Right now, those chants at home echo an entitlement to kill, echo an entitlement to plunder, to destroy lives that are not seen or deemed worthy, and where racism and colonialism is not a dog whistle, but is on full display. So for those who are concerned about saving their democracy at home, I want to tell them that there is no democracy to save that manifests itself in ongoing genocide in this way. Consider that your fellow Palestinian Americans, Arab Americans, American Muslims have been subject to a fascist regime at home already, not only in being forced to watch a genocide for which we are punished for naming, but also to have anti-terrorism act being leveled against those of us who are protesting U.S. policy, who are entreating the United States to follow its own law, the National Security Memorandum Number 20, the Arms Export Control Act, the Leahy Amendment, insisting that the U.S. cannot continue even at the bare minimum to transfer arms to a belligerent state that is violating U.S. and international law. Palestinian, Arab American, American Muslims have been attacked, have been stabbed, have been run over. And yet you are telling us that we have to save a democracy at home. We are not living in a democracy, and the worst is yet to come. And for those who are watching helplessly because they think Congress is beyond reach and out of hand, this is local as well. This extends down to your community and your university, where university administrators have called on cops in order to punish students who are excellent students, who, contrary to what Netanyahu, a foreign agent, is telling the United States, don't know what the River Jordan to the Mediterranean Sea is, have studied it meticulously because of Palestine studies in the United States and the Centers for Middle East Studies, who understand ethnic studies, who understand global politics, who understand international law. Because they are meticulous students and who are and acting upon their agency, they too are being punished by university administrators. This is a problem from the top to the root. If you want to save a democracy, you must enforce a ceasefire now. You must end a transfer, U.S. transfer of weapons now. Shame, shame, shame on the Democratic Party for allowing a president that they didn't trust to enter into a debate or to make a comment without misnaming world leaders to make policy on the lives of Palestinians and their futures for 292 days. They are more worried about the optics in this election than they are about the lives of Palestinians, which indicates very well that they are deriving their power from the slaughter of Palestinians, that this machine is functioning on those campaign donations, on those weapons manufacturers, on those Islamophobic institutions who are fomenting this so that 67% of the Democratic base cannot be represented adequately by their leadership. My second reaction to that is salute to the protesters who continue to risk their bodies, who risk their reputation, who risk time and being attacked by police and police brutality. They are the kernels. They are the seed now that can grow, that can ripen into something worth living for in the future. This does not bode well for our future. This is what's on offer for the rest of the world as we see climate catastrophe being imposed upon us, where the only thing on offer is that only a few shall live. And the model that Israel is creating here is that the racist supremacists, that the colonialists, that they will live and that others must die. And we see in these protesters an alternative future, one that screams we have safety and solidarity, one that says that it is all of us or none of us. Enough with the Islamophobic tropes. Netanyahu does not care about homosexual communities, about LGBTQIA communities, many of them live in Gaza. Those bombs have not spared them. Those buildings have fallen upon them. There is no concern for those lives. And yet Islamophobia and anti-Palestinian racism is so endemic that it can be passed along and even echoed by so-called liberal media in this moment. Look, I'm with the uncommitted campaign that is asking here, that is asking the Democrats to impose an embargo on arms transfer, and that is asking them to impose a permanent ceasefire right now. They have a chance. They, at the 11th hour, replace the presidential candidate. Surely they have the agency to make this shift too. Although that said, I want to point out to listeners that when Biden came into office, he had the opportunity to reverse Trump's disastrous policies that were very explicitly racist, from the apartheid plan, which he called the deal of the century, to the, you know, annexation of the Golan Heights, sovereignty over all of Jerusalem and contravention of the UN Charter of occupation law. The ICJ decision just confirmed that this is all illegal, that Israel's presence is unlawful. And yet the Democrats did not reverse any of those policies but to reinstate UNRWA funding. Netanyahu in this moment was the lowest hanging fruit for the Democrats. He has been since his ascendancy made his primary goal in office the torpedoing of a Palestinian state, which the United States says is a policy priority for it. What are they doing? What are they doing? He has made clear that there will never be a Palestinian state. We protested him 24 years ago in Berkeley and prevented him from speaking then. And that continues today. One has to ask, is it that Americans aren't learning, or is it that it just doesn't matter, that they are going to support Netanyahu, whatever he does? Recall also that in 2012, it was Netanyahu that oversaw a commission that resulted in the Levy report that said that, in fact, there was no occupation, and they retroactively legalized outposts. In 2017, they passed the regularization law, which allowed Israel an order to retroactively legalize the confiscation of private Palestinian land. These are very, you know, the nuances within Israeli law, but they have basically paved that path. More recently, in 2018, that they passed the nation state law, which says that only Jewish Zionists have the right to sovereignty in historic Palestine, which was a nail in the coffin that said there was no Palestinian state. And if there was any confusion, just last week, the Knesset passed a law that said that there would be no Palestinian state. You are literally hosting a man that is the lowest hanging fruit that you could have plucked to continue to speak out of both sides of your mouth and fail to do even that. So I am putting a challenge to all those who are worried about our democracy, who are pointing fingers worriedly about the Palestinians who have not had time to mourn the dead, that the responsibility is on you. The DNC has agency. They are meeting. They can impose an arms embargo. They can impose and call for a permanent ceasefire now.
In a moment, we're going to go to an Israeli and Palestinian peacemaker who addressed a session of a number of the Congress members who refused to attend Netanyahu's address. But I just wanted to end by quoting Congressmember Mark Pocan of Wisconsin. He said, "I won't be attending Netanyahu's speech to Congress. I only regret that an arrest warrant for his war crimes has not yet been issued by the ICC, as I would have gladly served it to him on the House floor." The significance of this, Noor Erekat, that the ICC has said it's going to be issuing an arrest warrant for the Prime Minister of Israel.
I think there's two things here. One is the broader significance of the fact that everything that Netanyahu was saying was contravening and challenging and appending a very tenuous world order. One, where ICJ decisions on plausible genocide, on the route of the apartheid wall, on the unlawful occupation are dismissed as being as the threat to the so-called peace process, where even the ICC is being dismissed and being called, he basically called the International Criminal Court liars that we can't trust. He contravened the prohibition on the acquisition of territory by force as he celebrated the annexation of the Golan Heights and Jerusalem to a jubilant Congress, which is basically telling the world that the United States also doesn't believe in this international order. And And so this is what is of primary concern. The second thing is, I would have loved to see allies alongside Representative Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian in Congress, who basically stood up there in the middle of what felt like a mob to protect her, to stand by her side, to shut it down as activists have shut it down, to make it clear that there is dissent, not only through boycott, but through an explicit message. The problem in doing that is precisely that this is a U.S. war led by the Democratic Party. This is the U.S.'s genocide. And now the Democrats are finding themselves in a place where they want to be able to protest and also take the reins of power in November. They can resolve that by demanding a permanent ceasefire now, by suspending arms transfers now.
All right. I don't care if your nanny was black, or you ate grits for breakfast every morning, and you knew a girl in high school, a black girl, and she was nice. I don't care if your nanny was black because Michael Griffiths is dead, killed by white youths who got off free, even though witnesses testified to their crime. So I don't care, you hear? I don't care because black woman Tawana Brawley was raped by four white cops who are still out on the street, and Donald Trump takes out a three-page ad in the New York Times calling for the death of six black youth accused of raping a white woman. So I don't care if your nanny was black and you ate grits for breakfast every morning and you knew a black girl in high school and she was nice. I don't care, you hear? I don't care, cause for too long we have held our pain in our very flesh. For too long our bleeding hearts in our chest. For too long our eyes have seen what they can no longer bear to see. Our anger will rise like a red flood and spread across this land. Tear down monuments built on our blood and cast away false idols, and we will tear down this wall, tear down these walls, tear down these walls of this Jericho, of this Toronto. So I don't care if your nanny was black and you ate grits for breakfast every morning and you knew a black girl in high school and she was nice. I don't care, you hear? I don't care. Me no care, you hear? Me no care. I don't care, you hear? I don't care.
Yeah, blessed sounds, blessed work, blessed tongue, blessed respecting all black people and brown. Zion and I wear the crown, and I will not be going down. People could actually finish the job. They almost finished the job with black people in the United States because they're still being getting taken out at least about three a day or something like that. And nothing is rolling it down or slowing it down or stopping it. You just hear the same excuses all the time. I was scared for my life. But there was nothing there to make you scared. Why were you... Anyhow... these is hurtful things. These is things that we have to look at whether the world upside down or it downside up. Good morning, Martin.
Yeah, man. Blessed love, man.
Yeah, that was a beautiful representation last night. All of us enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it all the more because I went away with the sounds in my head.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, give thanks for that. Thank you, a fantastic Friday staff and people. Yes, mm-hmm. Ross Rico and Oguna and Katrin and them. This is listeners, this is pertaining to High Road